Hello, hope you're doing really, really well today and that you had a good weekend. Actually, I'm meant to talk about this more, but not too much, but I want to sneak into that. Anybody who wants to work with me and have access to me all the time, and you have an iPhone, please download Bedtime with a Y. It's got a great curriculum that I made, and I'm coaching within that app. I think it's really helpful for anyone that needs a little bit more hand-holding support and a guided path forward. Now, that said, oh, by the way, if you have an Android phone, it is coming to Android 2 in hopefully December. Now, this said, lots of good questions I'm particularly excited about. An email from Alba, which because I think it is really a classic email, classic question, one that I get all the time. I think it's going to be really helpful diving into that one and tons of other things we're going to talk about. That said, I want to start with a little bit of a rant here. Something happened today. I was actually at work and I got tagged in this conversation in Twitter. Somebody named Amy. She tagged me and Martin Reed, by the way, and said, "What do you guys think of this?" And I want to read this to you because I think a little bit for my own personal, self-therapeutic reasons, but I think this is really important for anyone here with us tuning in. So, where is it here? What do you think of this? So that was the tweet. Let's see if you can open it. Sorry, I'm getting. I can't find the right there. How about there? I'm really sorry. Somehow I just can't find. Let me just go to the original thing here. Here it is. Sorry about that. So this is a tweet from 6 hours before now, and the headline goes like this: "You can sleep when you're dead, and that might happen earlier if you have insomnia. Meta-analysis shows difficulty falling asleep and non-restorative sleep associated with all-cause mortality and cardiovascular disease mortality." And I'm not going to name any names here, but if you follow me on Twitter, you can see who tweeted this. It's a PhD, and this Amy person asked me to comment on this. So I go in, I check out this article because that's very contrary to everything that's been published, right? At least that insinuation is, right? So I read the article, and in fact, what does it say? Not even deep inside into it. In the abstract itself, it says the following: "Insomnia disorder, difficulty maintaining sleep, and early morning awakenings prove not to be associated with all-cause mortality and cardiovascular disease mortality. No insomnia symptom proved to be associated with cancer-related mortality." It says that right there in the abstract. And so what are they talking about? Well, in a subset of these people that they followed over time, in the subset in the mid to older age population, there was a moderate credibility that difficulty falling asleep was associated with all-cause mortality. By the way, all-cause mortality is just like dying for any reasons. And now, so they had to really dig into this data to find a subset of the people studied to find any correlation, any association between anything. Now, how surprising is it that somebody that has, let's say, heart failure or has cancer or has, COPD, end stage, like term, late stage and COPD, how surprising is it that a person that has a lot of health issues also has difficulty falling asleep? I don't find that surprising at all. That association is not surprising at all. That's expected, right? The surprising thing and the amazing thing with the study is that insomnia disorder, difficulty staying asleep, early morning waking was not associated with all-cause mortality. Nothing was associated with cancer-related mortality. There is tons of good news. So I tweeted that back and I said, "If this is incredible, it's incredible that you're burying all these amazing, reassuring findings, and instead you find something that you can scare people." I didn't say it that way. I just said it's incredible that you focus on that instead. And now here's the thing that just blew my mind today, that the actual author, who was the person who had tweeted this out, said, "It's an interesting line to walk between emphasizing the importance of insomnia and reassuring folks that bad sleep isn't a death sentence. hard to get that kind of nuance in a tweet, especially the one that people will read and digest. So basically what this person is saying is that, you know, you shouldn't emphasize this or that. You should be careful what you say. But it's hard to get all that into a tweet that people read and digest. Meaning, if I say it like that, nobody's going to pay attention. This is a tacit acknowledgement that you're using scare tactics to get attention. Black on white. And then in another reply to me, where I say, there's not a single study that links insomnia, shows that insomnia causes any type of health issues. And the same author says, agree regarding causality. This is insanity. It's total insanity. It's so maddening and saddening. And like, you know, somebody who's a researcher and produces this article is flat out just scaring people to get attention. You know, and that is what drives this whole, you know, there's all the sleep anxiety that's out there is driven by people that want attention because that's going to get, you know, that's how they get funded to get research. That's what funds their salaries. That's what get eyeballs, you know, advertising, all that stuff. So, thanks for tuning in. I feel better already. Actually, right after this happened on Twitter, I called Martin Reed and vented a little bit. And so, Martin, if you hear this, thank you for listening. That really meant a lot. Okay, so on to more positive things. We have an email from Alba. And actually, let's just read a little bit from the original email from 5 days ago, which I made a reply to, I believe in the latest, I believe Thursday. And at that point in time, she had already said, I appreciate your suggestion not letting insomnia take over my life. That's exactly what I have been doing for the longest time, thinking, obsessing about it, and so forth. So the little background that I made in it right now. She replied again, and this was just 4 hours ago, and wrote the following. Hi, Daniel. Hope you're well. Thank you for your response to my last email. I had another question. I've been doing much better with sleep for several days following my last email to you. However, yesterday was a bad night. I did as you suggested and try not to pay attention to it. I ended up watching a movie on Netflix, and although I couldn't fall back asleep, I wasn't stressing out or angry about not sleeping. I know what you mentioned in your episodes, that what brings sleep back is wakefulness, and you suggest to be active and have sleep restriction, spending less time in it. My question is, when you say to be active, what do you mean? How active? I used to work out at least 4 days a week, but my energy and stamina has been very low and I haven't been able to get motivated to work out. So with that said, I'm not active at this time. I just go about my day and handle my regular responsibilities like my children, school, and home-related tasks. But when I'm done, I'm usually laying down on the couch watching TV. Is this bad? Should I be doing other things? I just don't have the energy when all this is said and done. And then she says, thank you for your help. You're a godsend. And thanks so much for the Alba. That means the world to me, really. And now, couple of things. Firstly, the reason I wanted to start off with this email is that I get that email all the time, or that message, or that patient or something. Meaning, you have somebody that has struggled with sleep for a long time. They're starting to implement these techniques that we talk about here. Spending less time in bed, shifting attention away from sleep, you know, finding reasons that you shouldn't really be so worried about, etc. And like Alba, sleeps better for several days. But then you have a night of like restless night, a night of very little sleep. And in fact, Alba's email is a little bit different because she goes into like maybe specifically asking about activity, but mostly what I hear is similar story to this one. But somebody says, what do I do now? You know, what should I be doing? And here's the thing. The focus really should be on those, let's say, 5 days when you slept. Well, that's the news. That's amazing. That's fantastic. That's what should get all our attention. And yet, of course, I mean, this is totally natural, Alba, like and everybody else sitting in here. That's completely natural that you're like, but then this happened. So what do I do now? But if this happens, and by the way, I didn't do my usual disclaimer, which I'm doing now. Nothing is medical advice here, just me sharing general advice that I hope will help everybody here. What we should be doing is really focusing on those nights you actually slept well. Like just thinking about it, telling people about it, just, you know, writing it down, and that really builds sleep confidence. And now what's so nice here is that, you know, when you slept better and then you have like something of a setback, well, you know what? That setback is now the outlier. Now you have a baseline that's actually, you know, sleeping pretty good. And so that, so the, what I want to convey here is always that positive thing, you know, that things have gotten better, which is, we should celebrate, and that's amazing. And in the general, I think this applies to anyone, including like someone in your situation, Alba, is that in fact, if I just finished this reply here by saying, you know, just do exactly what you've been doing this last few days, don't change anything, that alone is that's the most important thing. That's the most important thing, because when you treat this outlier as kind of a hiccup, you don't pay any attention, then you get back on track. And here's something that I'm going to be talking more and more about. The comeback is so important, because that's what builds confidence. What do I mean by that? Well, if you start to sleep a little better, and then you take a step backwards, you're not sleeping well, and you just keep going, and you go back to sleeping well again, then you've shown that, you know, this, your strategy works. Like you can sleep. You can even get past a stretch of poor sleep simply by employing like the techniques I talked about. Nothing external. You yourself have gotten past a kind of like a setback or a, you know, this insomnia came back, but you got past that. That's what really builds sleep confidence, you know? And for a lot of people, it just becomes one setback. You get back on track and that's it. For a lot of people, it becomes a couple of setbacks, but guess what? Every setback you come back from using bedtime restrictions, spending less time in bed, and like shifting attention and all of that, that really builds sleep confidence and leads towards sleeping well forever. And what was the final thing I want to say there? Yeah, just that expression, whatever kills you, what doesn't kill you, make whatever, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, definitely applies to insomnia. Now, that being said, that kind of general remark for this situation, let's go towards the more specific question about activity here. And I think do I have to read it again? I don't think so. A couple of things on that one. When I talk about activity here, and I say like it's good to be active, what I really want to say is the following, that it's not important to be physically active or active in any specific form. It's just important that you do something that keeps you from thinking about sleep. The worst thing is when somebody you know, has a really hard time sleeping, they're kind of like up and down all night, and then, you know, that makes you feel tired, of course, but that when that person then goes on to be like so tired that they just spend the entire day on a couch and kind of like read up to sleep, think about what they're going to do, fall asleep a little bit, and think more about sleep, and then that is really hard when things have gone to that point. So you don't necessarily need to be physically active or out running. You don't need to do anything particular. If you just kind of go about your day like you're saying, Alba, and you take care of your kids, you have school, you have things you need to do, and you're not obsessing about sleep, you're not thinking, but you're overthinking it, that's totally fine. And then I guess a few things that I want to add is, one is like when people are like really trying to be physically active so they can sleep, that's never good. Nothing you do to produce sleep is good. But the more pertinent actually here is the one where I was going to say, oh yeah, you know, if you had like one night where you didn't sleep well at all, then, and then you say, you know, I'm going to rest a little bit today, but you're not, you know, overthinking sleep, or you just decide to rest, and that's totally fine. But here is that if there was something you actually wanted to do that day, you were looking forward and you were hoping to do, then try not to cancel that because you didn't sleep well. When we like, kind of like, we avoid doing things because we didn't sleep well. That's kind of a give to the insomnia, and insomnia never stops there. Then if we kind of like decide I'm going to cancel this activity so I can sleep well tomorrow, then next time it's going to want you to do more, etc. So try not to cancel activities that you were planning to do, hoping to do. Even if you find if you're tired, try to find that reserve to still do things that you want to do, and that's really helpful. But all that said, Alba, I'm extremely encouraged, and I think if just gonna keep doing what you're doing, you are going to do really, really, really well. And everybody else that is in the same spot, you know, you're going to do really, really well. Awesome. Let's do this a little bit more chronologically, and putting my glasses back on here. We are going to MJ, who wrote me an email 3 days ago, and then there's another one as well. Let's just jump in and read. So 3 days ago, this came from MJ. Afternoon. I was wondering if you can touch on post-sleep troubles and moving on after that. Kind of the aftercare, if you want to call it that. I know since getting past sleep issues, we all must completely shut off all ties, Google searching thoughts and do other CBT things, etc., to actually move past this. True. This actually has helped me to get past it, to move on. Is this also the same idea, I guess, as your post-sleep issues? Is this the solution to kind of post-sleep issues as well? Let me guess. It is. Because a lot of the time, I guess, there is some anxiety, if you will, regarding that it will come back, right? I can go on and on regarding the what-if scenarios. I think you know what I'm talking about. You know, during, say, the next job assignment or on vacation, I'm considering going to Thailand in a couple months. Like I said, I think you know the question I'm asking regarding anxiety and thoughts regarding that. Could you please discuss this on your podcast? It would be much appreciated. And I think here's another one. Could you please tell people to quit Googling their symptoms and coming up with their sporadic insomnia or whatever it's called, because it's completely ridiculous. Well, I hear what you're saying, MJ, but people are seriously concerned about that. And but anyway, I get the whole Dr. Google thing because I was guilty of it. As soon as you realize this does nothing for you, then when you make the best first step moving forward, had to say that LOL. All right, MJ. Well, on behalf of MJ, quit Googling your symptoms and finding, you know, odd reasons for your insomnia, because MD stopped doing that and did, but I totally agree that like looking for the reason, Googling it, going on a story, it's not helpful. Now that said, what if you have worked with like the CBTI techniques, mindfulness, education, behavior change, but the things I talk about here, what if you've applied those techniques and you're sleeping better on a baseline, but you still have that kind of like PTSD thing. You're still worried about what if it happens again. And it's interesting. I have a kind of a list of things that I'm going to talk about. And one of them is, on my list of things to talk about is the, what did I put there again? Oh yeah, the big one. And I picked this up from a podcast where Martin Weed was talking with Nick Wignall. And Nick was saying like a lot of people with insomnia are afraid of the big one coming back again, that kind of original, the original episode where you didn't sleep at all for like 3 days or whatever it was, that's gonna come back. And so what to do? Well, I think you kind of said it, MJ. You have to kind of leave, like, you know, the more you can leave that insomnia, leave that out of your life, the better. Typically I feel like when things are getting better, it becomes easier. As you said, like it becomes easier just at baseline, but then there could be such scenarios when there's, you know, things are different and you become a little bit triggered again. And so what should you do? Well, I think, one of the most important things is just to, when you have a sleepless night or a night of very little sleep, just remember that that happens to every single human being out there. Everyone has trouble sleeping at times. When something is stressful, then it is a completely normal reaction not to sleep well. In fact, if somebody said, I'm moving to this place and I'm starting a new job and I think it's going to be a high stress job, and then said, but I sleep great, then that sounds off. Or even, let's use another example, like if the dog that you loved had an accident and died, and you were like, I slept perfect, then it'd be like, that's not right, something is off, you know? So again, the reaction of not sleeping well under certain kind of stressful circumstances, that is normal. Everyone has that. If that happens to you, it does not mean that insomnia is back, you know? And again, that's part of not reacting. And I want to sneak one more thing in here, which is if you're someone that travels a lot, because I feel happens quite a lot, is somebody gets to a point where they sleep pretty good at home, but whenever they travel, they're not sleeping well. I think there are a couple of things, you know, to do there. One of them is to accept that you cannot control sleep. So you can't like say, okay, I'm going to be traveling, so therefore I have to do this and this and that so I sleep well. That is counterproductive. You can't do that. But what you can do is kind of the CBT thing with exploring beliefs and things of that nature, meaning the air is the same wherever you stay, you know, it's not the bed, doesn't matter. Like it's all the anticipation that causes insomnia. But how can you reverse that? Well, you can find evidence that is kind of contrary to your expectation and belief, meaning you find the outlier. You find that time when you were traveling for work and it was stressful and you actually slept good. Or you find the other outlier where things were normal at home and you actually didn't sleep well that night, which shows you that the trigger, if that is traveling, if it's job related, if something kind of recurring, a recurring trigger, that, and you find that outlier, it can show you that you don't have to sleep poorly even though you're traveling, for example. And just knowing that, just realizing that, just finding that outlier can just help reducing that expectation that you're not going to sleep well and the stress of that, and that could be really, really helpful. MJ, hope that was good. And I told MJ I was going to a reply here, and MJ said, along with my email yesterday regarding, I guess, the anxiety part of what I want to call it regarding person's next work assignment or vacation, that my reply before was very timely actually, or whatever. I can't remember the whole email I sent yesterday, but mostly the aftercare. Could you also include a talk on relapse as well? I guess the answer to that is absolutely doing nothing. Continue. Yeah, right. Also in your podcast, you mentioned about nighttime activities prior to sleep, either doing enjoyable things, watching TV. You should always have a set get up time roughly every morning and not worry about your bedtime, right? Because we should go to bed when we're sleepy, right? What happens if you get out of town till very late? Is the person still set up to get up at the same time roughly, or can that be adjusted? Yeah, very good questions. Very good questions all here. I think in terms of the aftercare, kind of cover that already. I want to say if you've had trouble sleeping and then at some point later on in life, you know, you get one or two sleepless nights and you try not to react, try not to do anything, and then you still end up having more and more trouble sleeping, you like, try as long as possible not to react, not to do anything, but you can always come back. You know, you can always come back to this channel or go back to wherever that place was where you found, you know, you can always go back to doing what you did to get past insomnia the first time and just do it again and find that confidence knowing that I've gotten through it and I can do it again. And as I spoke about before, like the comeback thing, hopefully once you've gotten past insomnia, you never have it again. And I believe that chance is very good because when you understand insomnia, it's less likely to come back. But that said, the comeback is important. If you have another stretch of trouble sleeping at some later point in your life, and you use the same techniques you used to get over the first one, that will build even more sleep confidence. Hopefully it never happens, but if it happens again and you get past it again, you know, gives you even more confidence. You can do it a third time if that happens, which it very, very likely won't. So another question here is, let's say if you are, you know, you're out of town and you're out with friends and you stay up very, very late, what are you supposed to do? The first thing with that is, and I've gotten this question a couple of times before, the first thing I want to say here is that the fact that you're out until late hours with your friends or doing whatever it is that you're and you're enjoying that time, that's fantastic. That's amazing. That shows confidence. I'm super happy to hear that, because that shows that you're not staying inside because you're worried about not being able to sleep, you know? And so that's good. And I want to say, if somebody is like having, if somebody does this while having kind of very active insomnia, that's, I think that's still good. That still shows confidence. But that said, it is probably good to still try to get up fairly early. You know, if let's say you were supposed to get up at 6 and you were up until like, you know, 2 or 3, then I think it's perfectly fine to sleep, you know, until maybe 8, but not maybe, you know, like 1 p.m., you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, it can drift a little bit that day. That's totally fine, but not too much. However, if you are in a position where you're like, you feel pretty confident, you're actually no longer keeping a strict wake-up time, because that's the goal ultimately. It's like you're supposed to be like everybody else, just, you know, get up when you have to do for work, but other times not worry about it. If you've already reached kind of that stage where you're kind of just living your life, and you've had insomnia in the past, but it's not active anymore, then I say you don't need to worry about this at all. Like, you stay up late with your friends and you sleep until you wake up, totally fine. So that, yes, could definitely adjust it. And it can be adjusted. And kind of big picture here, just to clarify this, is that when you start working towards getting past your insomnia, I feel that it is important in the beginning to have kind of like, you know, a little bit of rules and regulation, you know, get up at this time, don't go before this time. But the goal is to completely leave that behind and just not think about it at all. So, you know, the goal is to kind of leave that, all that behind, no rules, no regulations, just live your life and be happy. Cool. So that said, that was MJ. And I think in this email here, nothing more there. So we will move on to this other inbox here. And we talked about this already. And we talked about that. So we are going to move on to an email that came in 2 days ago from the Philippines. Vincent here from the Philippines. I've read Guy Meadows' book. Watch and research a lot with insomnia, which I know is counterproductive, because to be able to sleep, you absolutely should do nothing. But I have 3 questions. 1, at night, sometimes I don't have feelings of anxiety, but my mind has a lot of thoughts and I can't sleep. What to do with that? 2, at nights that I have anxiety about sleeping, I do breathing exercises. What can I do about that? 3, is it possible that my circadian clock allows me to be awake 2 days before I sleep? Because I seem to notice this pattern, 2 days or no sleep or more. There was another email from Vincent. Let's take a look at that as well. I have read the books of Guy Meadows about ACT, acceptance and commitment therapy. When sleep anxiety thoughts and other thoughts appear in my head, I accept and observe it with non-judgment, but I imagine those thoughts developed tentacle and attack me. I have OCD. I think intrusive thoughts about how I can accept those thoughts when it's attacking me. Very sorry to hear this, and that whole, you know, what you're describing as the thoughts are attacking me. It's like, oh, that definitely, I can feel kind of anxiety when, you know, described in those words. But going back to the first email here, and a couple of things here. Yes, I definitely believe that like going out and Googling and researching is not good at all. That doesn't help anyone. Because when to be able to sleep, we should do absolutely nothing. That is true, but, and it's interesting, I think we'll talk about this in a second here. I have this discussion with Pexi, which I think is a really good one. Rapexi always points out that you should do nothing, and that is true, but I think in the beginning, it is hard. It's hard to go from a point of like having a lot of trouble sleeping and then do nothing. So in the beginning, I think it is good to have like a plan or strategy, if you will. And I think that is, I think the best thing is what I'm starting to call to sleep tight. Instead of calling it bedtime restriction or sleep restriction, I'm going to start calling it sleep tight, which means that you get up the same time every morning, let's say 6, and you go to bed not before, let's say, midnight, or you can decide, I'm not going to check the time after 11 and then do whatever I feel is right, something like that. And I think that's really helpful. And we're going to, you know, keep that in mind as we go towards the specific questions here. Number one, at night, I have this feeling of anxiety and I have a lot of thoughts and I can't sleep. What can I do with that? Well, you know, the ACT that you mentioned, yeah, the acceptance commitment therapy, that's one way of dealing with that, which is, you know, you're thinking like, I'm not gonna be able to do my job tomorrow. And then instead of like reacting to that would be like, well, if I can't do my job, then what's gonna happen and how can I sleep better so I don't, that doesn't happen. That's reacting to the thought, but with ACT, you would instead say, okay, I'm not gonna be able to do my job today, tomorrow. Whoa, I've had this thought before. Talking with the thought or looking at the thought from the outside and say, yeah, I know you, I had you before, and you're a thought that comes every now and then, something to that effect. And I feel like ACT can work, but it's not easy. In that podcast I referred to before, which is, you know, Martin Reed's podcast, the one where he talked with Nick Wignall, they both had the same kind of discussion to the one I'm having now with you, or like, you know, monologue, if you will, which is ACT is a advanced skill. It's not easy to do. It takes a lot of practice. So it can help, but I think it's a hard one. And so I think some more practical things that I think can be done here is a technique I learned from actually Nick Wignall, which is like the kind of intense journaling, I call it, which is you set off some time at, let's say, 6 p.m., 10 minutes, and you just like everything that you're anxious about, you try to get them on paper, like really get it out there, like every single thing, and then put that away. And the thing there is that if you do that, you know, today, you may not notice any change tonight or tomorrow night, but if you keep doing it, it gives you that kind of, it gives your thoughts an outlet, and those kind of anxious thoughts an outlet, so they don't kind of bombard you or they don't like pop up as much. So that's one thing. A couple other things, when you have like anxiety at night, you know, there's nothing we can do to kind of turn that off or like, stop, you know, actively stop having anxiety or like stop the thoughts. That cannot be done. It's impossible for anyone. So I think in my mind, it's all about like shifting attention is very good. Trying to do something that is completely unrelated to sleep, that is enjoyable, that you want to do, and that can like shift your attention and like you're no longer anxious because that shifts your attention. Breathing exercises, which you ask about here, I think is something like, if you enjoy breathing exercise, if you love it, it feels great, then you can do that. But the tricky thing here is that I think breathing exercises are often done with the purpose of calming one down so that one can sleep. And then it becomes that thing where like, I've done breathing exercises for how long? 10 minutes. Am I sleepy? I'm not sleepy. No, I should do some more. It becomes an effort. You know, the intent is to kind of produce sleep, and then it doesn't work. It actually does the opposite. It makes you more stressed out. So the other things I talked about, shifting attention by doing something enjoyable, I think is much better. Now, number three, is it possible that my circadian clock allows me to be awake 2 days? Because I've noticed this pattern, not uncommon. And I know I always seem to refer to Ellen, but there's a lot of episodes about someone named Ellen, and she comments often here as well. She had that same thought of like, I think my circadian rhythm it runs on 48 hours, not 24. And it's a common thought that develops, you know, from the inside. When one has insomnia oneself, you're trying to figure out what is going on, and that thought often develops. But circadian rhythms aren't like that. You know, they're circadian rhythms actually are ruled by Zeitgebers. It's called like things that set the time. So if somebody kind of gets up at the same time every day and kind of does the same thing, you know, throughout the day, etc., then your circadian rhythm follows that. Now, things can get messed up when you have insomnia, but that doesn't mean that circadian rhythm, you know, your internal clock has changed. That can actually not happen. The internal clock is changeable, meaning you can move from the Philippines to, Holland, and you can adjust, you know, so it's adjustable, but it's not like it can become set for 36 hours or set for, no, that cannot happen. It's always going to be set to around 24 hours. So I hope this helped, Vince. Please, you know, send another email or comment if you have follow-up questions. And then we start with Alba, and let's go onto YouTube here and check out the comments. There were a couple of ones I know I want to talk about. Actually, let's go back here. Katie, and I think I wanted to comment on this one real quick. This came in one day ago. This is from, I can't pronounce this. This is a comment on Insomnia Insight number 258 from Vaishantisofi. Nah, sorry, I am totally botching it. But anyway, and it just says, thank you so much, Daniel. And I think I talked about here, like, that a bedtime routine will just do something you enjoy. If you enjoy watching TV before bed, totally fine. Thanks so much, Daniel, because watching TV is my bedtime routine since I was a kid. I hope I can sleep like back then. And I just, the reason I wanted to include this was just to say, if you enjoyed watching TV as a kid, and it's still something it's just pleasant, enjoy it, then that's great. But if in your mind you're thinking, because I watched TV as a kid and I slept good, I'm now gonna watch TV so that I can sleep good, then it's a sleep effort. There's something you're doing to try to produce sleep, and whatever we do to try to produce sleep produces insomnia. The opposite happens, because if you're like, I'm going to watch TV so I can sleep, then you're like, okay, I watched 10 minutes, I don't feel sleepy, maybe I should do some more, maybe I should change the channel, or how do I feel, or not. This is self-monitoring. But if you just enjoy it, I bet you will sleep like when you were a kid. And speaking of this, I want to add something from Alex, who I communicated with in an email on a little bit of a separate topic, but he told me, like, he said something that's confusing is, like, I know that if I play video games in the evening, I'm going to get so engaged that I'm going to stay up really late and have a hard time sleeping. Yes, if you know that it's not good for you to do this or that before you go to bed, use your common sense. Of course you shouldn't do that. But I've been talking a lot about lately about going to bed. You should do something that's enjoyable. Like, you know, I often use those examples, watching TV or checking Netflix show or something that you enjoy. Totally stand by that. But if there's something that you know is going to cause you to have trouble sleeping, then yeah, don't do it. Okay. Now, I'm feeling that there's a comment I'm missing, but I'm gonna double check my phone so I don't miss anything. So, here is a comment from Jules VDV from, it's a comment on Insomnia Insight number 46. And it's an episode on this familial sporadic fatal insomnia. And the comment reads as follows. 4 weeks ago, I was super tired for a week and I slept super bad. But that went over the second week. But now for 3 weeks straight, I have this permanent lightheaded feeling. And it's harder to think straight, and thought processing is slower, and I'm really starting to worry. I really hope it's not something serious. What I want to say is that whenever you're concerned about your health, then yes, of course, you should check with your doctor. When it comes to insomnia, feeling lightheaded, feeling kind of out of body experience, the kind of brain fog, you can't find your words, you know, you're confused. confused. All this is very, very common. All that is very common. And whenever we react to trouble sleeping, meaning we're like, I feel like I can't find my words. Something must be really serious. Let me Google this and let me find out what's going on. Oh, could it be this? Maybe it is. Maybe it's that. What if it's that? And then you can sleep even worse. Now this is really getting out. It's worse now. It's worse, you know, if we don't react, if we just like, okay, I'm not going to Google this or try to search for it. I'm just going to get up same time every day. I'm going to not go to bed early. I'm not going to do anything like that. Then typically the less attention it gets, the better things go. I just want to kind of sneak that one in there. Jules, hope it helps you and that you sleep better and feel better. And here, what is this? That was not a comment. And then, oh yeah, we have this one, which I remember. This is Dread the Days, 15 hours ago, said this. We have sporadic familial insomnia. My father just died at age 59. It's very scary. I'm currently on trazodone. I have severe hives. Both sides of my family have sporadic episodic with the onset of mania and bipolar for most women and women, both. As a note, they said my grandmother had safe insomnia. She actually only sleeps about 3 hours a night, but she's in her late 80s. My father's body began to attack him, and that mixed with the abuse of downers and bouts of dementia that eventually killed him. I noticed that a lot of people who take downers but suffer from long-term bouts of insomnia seem to have severe paradoxical medical reactions. I wonder if there's a correlation here. If we could just find that switch. I sleep often about 20 hours between rest and awake, but I do dream. I do also carry moderate plus minus COMT and 70 polymorphisms, which help increase the efficiency of selective sedatives. Anyway, thank you for covering this extensively. I thought I just want to comment on, like, you know, the familial insomnia, the fatal familial insomnia that a lot of people are so worried about. You know, again, nothing medical advice here, but my understanding of this is that it's it's an autosomal dominant condition. So you would have multiple family members that had that, and you know, if that is confirmed, then you know it wouldn't be sporadic. Is kind of what I thought about here. So it's you know, it's important, of course, to find out if that's really what was happening, or if there's something else. There may be other reasons why, you know, like you said, my father just died at age 59, which, by the way, is super sorry to hear that. But it sounds like there were maybe reasons, like you mentioned, like abuse of downers, dementia. There may be, you know, there may be other reasons. But I was just going to comment on this, like, if we could find the switch. And that's, you know, so often people with trouble sleeping are like looking for, like, feel like their sleep switch is broken, like the thing that just switches you from wakefulness to sleep is broken. And that belief or the search for that switch often is what really causes a lot of trouble sleeping. And sleep is not that complicated, in fact. It's just, and I'm going to talk about more of this, but it's like kind of gas and brake, meaning like the gas, what makes you want to sleep, is your sleep drive, like your body's need for sleep, and the brake is kind of like anxiety, preoccupation, worrying, etc. And if we have, let's say, both, we're both sleepy, we need to sleep, but we're also anxious, then, you know, you get this kind of like in and out, like very superficial sleep. If you have no gas, we're not sleepy, and we're stressed, then you're not going to sleep for sure. If you have neither, you're neither sleepy and you're not very anxious, you're not going to sleep either. It's really when you have the gas, like when you have the need for sleep, but nothing, no break, that's when sleep happens. That's really how it's regulated. And finding like the gas is really about like spending less time in bed and staying awake for maybe 17 or 18 hours, something like that. And that's how you build the gas, if you will. And the absence of the break is really about, you know, reducing anxiety and stress, which it's hard to do directly, but this, so that part is about like shifting attention, not finding things that you enjoy that keeps your attention away from sleep, and that way you have the gas and not the brain. All right, so let's go over here to, because I feel there was a specific comment that I am totally missing. And I've missed out on commenting on things before because I couldn't find the comments. And now my phone is acting up, but that, there you go, that's better. So I'm gonna look at it a different way on my phone to look at comments. And here we are. And let's see here. I believe this was actually a comment from Steve-O. Oh, there. Is it here? No. Is it here? Yes. All right. No, it was not that one. Oh, I feel like I'm missing out on this, but there was somebody who described this feeling of like feeling that something is really bizarre because I don't feel sleepy at all, and I can't find it. I can't find that comment. Oh, maybe here. Let's check this one. No, that's not the one. Yeah, somebody described like if, not feeling sleepy at all, and it was saying like. The odd thing with me is that I'm not anxious, I'm not worried, I'm just like not sleeping, and I just want like I want to comment on that and say that that's not unusual. And if you think about it, like if you weren't worried at all about your sleep, if you sleep like very little, but you weren't worried at all about that, then you probably wouldn't be on my YouTube channel, you probably wouldn't research it. You just go about your day. Even if you sleep very little, you wouldn't be worried about it. So the fact that you are thinking about it is a sign that you're a little bit worried, which is a sign that you probably have a little bit hyper arousal. Your brain is kind of moving fast, you know, and it's that very possibly is the reason that you're not sleeping, even though it doesn't feel like it. And that's also, again, I know, mentioned Ellen all the time here, but exactly the same thing with her. She said, I don't feel worried or stressed out or anything. I just don't sleep a little. But in fact, after a while, she realized there was some hyper arousal there. And I'm just going to double check real quick here that I'm not missing any messages. No, I'm not. So if I did miss anything, if I've said that I was going to reply to you and I didn't today, please let me know. Very sorry in that case, but please let me know with a comment or an email. My email is daniel@insomniainsight.co, and I will be back tomorrow with more. Until then, take it easy, and again, hope to have you back real soon. Bye-bye.